Support for Newsworthy comes from Enlivion, providing affordable housing and supportive services to help build strong foundations for a better future for hardworking families, seniors, and the disabled in Charlotte. More information available at Enlivion.com. And from Thrivent, a financial services company working with individuals and families to develop strategies for managing their money and planning for the future. More information at mark.hargrove@thrivent.com.
From 90.7 WFAE, this is Newsworthy for Thursday, May 1st, 2025. I'm Eric Thiel. The sound of a snare drum echoed across the UNC Charlotte campus Wednesday as the university marked 6 years since a deadly mass shooting. The school laid two wreaths outside the Kennedy Building to honor students Reed Parlier and Riley Howell, who were killed when a gunman burst into their class on the last day of the 2019 spring semester and opened fire. Howell was killed while charging at the gunman. The school writes on social media that the memories of Parlier and Howell continue to inspire strength, unity, and resilience. The gunman was a former student and in 2019 was sentenced to life in prison. A North Carolina appeals court ruled Wednesday that a law stripping the governor's authority to appoint State Board of Elections members can take effect for now, even though trial judges struck it down as unconstitutional last week. WUNC reports three judges on the Intermediate Level Court of Appeals unanimously granted the request of Republican legislative leaders to suspend enforcement of that ruling. If left intact, the decision means appointment duties would shift as soon as today from new Democratic Governor Josh Stein to GOP State Auditor Dave Bolick, at least temporarily. Barring a contrary ruling by the state Supreme Court, the decision means Bolick could appoint the board's five members from slates of candidates provided by the state Democratic and Republican parties. Stein's lawyers asked the Supreme Court late yesterday to halt temporarily the Court of Appeals decision. North Carolina House members approved legislation Wednesday to allow the state treasurer to invest up to 5% of public funds for retirement, education, transportation, general spending, and more in cryptocurrencies and other digital assets. The Raleigh News and Observer reports the North Carolina Digital Assets Investment Act, sponsored by 27 Republicans, applies to more than two dozen funds, including the state's $129 billion pension plan covering firefighters, teachers, police officers, and state employees. It calls for the North Carolina Treasurer and the State Bureau of Investigation to study how seized digital assets could be used to establish a digital assets reserve. If enacted, the law would also permit the State Treasury Department to consider a retirement program through which state employees could choose to invest in cryptocurrencies. The City of Charlotte is now accepting applications to fill the District 6 City Council seat vacated by Republican Tariq Bakari, who resigned to take a job with the Federal Transit Administration in Washington, D.C. Steve Harrison has this report.
The city will accept applications for the seat through May 13th. People interested in finishing Bakari's term must live in the South Charlotte District, and they must be of the same political party as him, a Republican. There will be a public forum for candidates to make their case to City Council on May 16th. Council members are scheduled to vote on Bakari's replacement on May 19th, and a new member would be sworn in by early June. Bakari's wife, Krista Bakari, has expressed interest in finishing his term, which ends in December. Steve Harrison, WFAE News.
Data from Syracuse University shows that while Immigration and Customs Enforcement has increased the number of detainers sent to jails by 72%, fewer individuals are being taken into ICE custody. Julian Berger has more.
The data shows that in North Carolina, 447 detainers were issued from January 20th to February 17th, but only 53 people were taken into ICE custody. That's only 12%. Nationwide, only 14% of people with detainers were taken into ICE custody. A detainer is a request from ICE to local jails to hold an undocumented inmate for up to 48 hours beyond their scheduled release. allowing ICE to take custody and start the deportation process. Immigrant advocates like Stefania Arteaga from the Carolina Migrant Network say the gap is due to resources.
ICE does not have the capacity to travel from Charlotte area to the Triad to the Triangle, picking people up. There's not the capacity, there's not the bandwidth, there's not the funding, either from the feds or from local sheriffs.
ICE, however, say that certain sheriffs, like Mecklenburg County Sheriff Gary McFadden, do not follow up with ICE before releasing inmates. And if a bill in the General Assembly that mandates increased sheriff cooperation with ICE becomes law, Arteaga says the number of people taken into ICE custody could rise. Julian Berger, WFAE News.
The Metropolitan Transit Commission on Wednesday night rejected a request from the town of Matthews to study a different funding split for a proposed 1 cent sales tax increase for transportation. Matthews had proposed spending 45% of the sales money on rail transit instead of 40. The town hopes that more money for trains could bring the Silver Line light rail closer to Matthews. Steve Harrison has more.
Last year, Charlotte and most Mecklenburg towns agreed to spend 40% of sales tax money on roads, 40% on trains, and 20% on buses. That plan wouldn't leave enough money to build light rail to Matthews. But a bill filed in the State House last month would allow more flexibility in how that tax money could be spent. Matthews Mayor John Higdon seized on that possibility and asked his colleagues on the MTC to look at more money for rail. But Mecklenburg County Manager Dina Diorio said she doesn't want to take money away from buses. And she said it's too late to consider different scenarios, even though the General Assembly hasn't yet voted on a bill to increase the sales tax.
I think having even a conversation around an additional scenario, I think will confuse the public after all the work that staff has done on that. And I think that would be unfair to all the public engagement work that's already taken place.
Higdon said the MTC will be making a long-term decision and that it's important to get it right.
I'm a little frustrated that we're saying we have to do this because we've done a lot of work on this. This is a 100-year decision. And yes, I'm incredibly frustrated because every town in the county is getting what they want except for Matthews.
Every MTC member voted no, except for Higdon. Steve Harrison, WFAE News.
The wife of former North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson has failed to pay back more than $100,000 to the state health department by a court-ordered deadline. A spokesperson for the State Department of Health and Human Services says Yolanda Robinson had until April 23rd to pay back the money sent to her nonprofit, Balanced Nutrition. The organization helped childcare businesses get reimbursed by the government for food purchases, but the state accused Robinson of inflating expenses and submitting duplicate receipts. The state says Robinson and her nonprofit are now disqualified from participating in the child and adult food care program. Her husband, Mark Robinson, lost his bid to become North Carolina governor in the last election. Renovations are complete at Mallard Creek Recreation Center on Johnson Ayler Road, and Mecklenburg County Park and Recreation is hosting a ribbon-cutting ceremony. The center had been closed for the work since December of 2023. Mecklenburg County Commission Chairman Mark Jarrell will be among the community representatives at the event this morning. The National Science Foundation has canceled hundreds of grants, and the National Endowment for the Humanities even more, many of which fund libraries, universities, and historic sites. The cancellation of grants bearing the scarlet letters DEI have left students and universities reeling. But even the threat of cancellation has had consequences. Zachary Turner has more.
A low din rumbles through the Hodges Taylor Gallery in Southend as people discuss the canvases and sculptures that fill its rooms. Paintings depict spectral explorers, and prints show fractured rocks drifting through space. UNC Charlotte student Danny Ferguson attended the exhibition with two friends.
I really like that he captures a lot of the different kind of angles that it has, and a lot of them seem regular, but then you look closer and there's more variation than first appeared.
Ferguson said the granular detail enticed him to look closer and closer at the rocks, which is fitting, given the origin of the works. UNC Charlotte professor and artist Marek Ranis spent a residency watching researchers who, in turn, spent weeks lying on the ground, looking very closely at rocks. He was shadowing Martha Carey Epps, a geologist at the university, and her students. Epps studies how and why rocks crack at the microscopic level, and how climate change is making rocks crack faster. Her research shows how these seemingly static objects, rocks, are actually constantly changing, and all those little cracks add up over time, until all of a sudden, thwomp. That's from a video shot near Atlanta, where a sheet of rock suddenly exfoliated, or cracked, due to the built-up pressure underneath. These tiny fissures can start with something as small as a molecule of water. As our climate warms, the atmosphere can hold more of these microscopic wedges, and the extra heat gives them more force. The collaboration inspired Ronice's exhibition. It gave Epps words to contextualize the broader impact of her work.
When we think of the global warming that we as humans are causing to our planet, you know, it's not these far-off ideas, as Mark always says, polar bears and glaciers. It's literally possibly cracking the bedrock under our feet.
The project also helped the PhD students understand the broader context of their research. According to Jose Gomez, the dean of the College of Arts and Architecture at UNC Charlotte.
Sometimes having someone from a very disparate background come in and draw you back out of it for a minute helps you broaden that conversation in a way that opens it up for a broader general public.
That ability to explain research to the general public can help students spread the word about their work and secure funding on their own. Collaborative opportunities like this one may become rarer as federal grants are cut. Even just the threat of funding cuts has restricted student opportunities at UNC Charlotte.
Got students who are connected to NSF projects that we're looking at mosquitoes and malaria prevention and new designs for housing in remote parts of the world like the African continent. Those trips are on hold right now because the funding climate's a little bit uncertain.
At UNC Chapel Hill, the federal government has terminated 72 projects, some without advance notice. The courts have since rescinded some of those terminations. Some federal agencies have issued stop work orders, often a harbinger of termination. The funding uncertainty has created an atmosphere of anxiety and confusion for students like Rosalie Terry, a PhD student at UNC Greensboro's biology department.
When we're done, especially if you're a, you know, fourth or fifth year student at this point, our options for what we can do after grad school feel a lot more limited.
She studies how grazers, such as elephants or zebras, and the plants they eat respond to climate impacts, like wildfires and drought. The next step for Terry would be to apply to a postdoc position with the federal agency, such as the U.S. Department of Agriculture. She only has a year left in school.
And now, as opposed to just being competitive based on merit, it's also going to be competitive because a lot of like state agencies or federal agencies have, you know, like half as much funding available to them to offer these sorts of positions.
Terry said she's now considering nonprofit work. Others are looking at the private sector for jobs, but some students who are counting on NSF-funded positions to continue their research are turning their sights abroad.
Students are considering expanding their job searches beyond what they were looking at before. And so there are folks now, at least like in my social circles, who are considering now expanding their like postdoc searches or their career searches outside of the U.S.
Terry said she would still encourage students who are passionate about research to pursue grad school, but doing their due diligence is more important than ever.
So when you're interviewing with advisors or looking for programs, maybe making that a part of the search now is saying like, hey, like with all of this funding uncertainty, does your department or your university have like a plan in place in case, you know, there are funding cuts again?
The National Science Foundation has said it will not fund projects aimed at broadening participation in STEM from underrepresented groups. Moving forward, the National Endowment for the Humanities will prioritize projects focused on U.S. history after the land's colonization by European settlers. Zachary Turner, WFAE News.
WFAE's climate coverage is supported in part by grants from the Salamander Fund and Green South Foundation. It's time now for the latest on business news in Charlotte. This week, Eli Portillo spoke with Christina Bowling, an editor at the Charlotte Ledger Business Newsletter.
So, Christina, you talked to several local stores that are seeing higher prices and grappling with a lot of uncertainty. What did you hear?
Sure, Eli. So we'd heard that local Asian grocery stores were already feeling stress from the tariffs. So reporter Rachel Black visited several of them here in Charlotte, and the owners told her that they're already getting price increases passed on from their distributors. And in some cases, they're seeing limits to the amount of goods that they can buy. you know, the store owners Rachel talked to are really stressed about it. You know, a majority of their customers are people who have moved to Charlotte from other countries. And, you know, they rely on these stores to be able to cook the foods that they enjoy from home. So, you know, in many cases, they're on tight budgets and they can't pay much more for groceries. And one of the store owners that Rachel talked to said he's cutting his profit margin just about as low as he can go so he can make sure that people get what they need. Large bags of white rice that used to sell for $38 at one store are now going for $48.
Yeah, and I know a lot of these stores are independent or smaller chains, so they might not have the wherewithal or the resources to hold the line on price as well as, say, a Walmart.
That's exactly right. I mean, a lot of these are mom and pop businesses and, you know, they get by on very thin margins. You know, one store owner that Rachel talked to said he's, you know, he's really trying to get creative with his sourcing. So, you know, if before he got a certain type of noodle from China, which is now having a 145% tariff, he's trying to source that noodle from another country so that, you know, he doesn't have to raise the prices that much for his customers.
The Charlotte Ledger wrote about a new program at Atrium Health that's designed to make care for children with severe diseases more comfortable by providing that care at home. So what's the thinking behind this and what effect might this have on the cost and quality of care?
Yeah, so Atrium just launched what's really the first program in the country that offers full hospital-level care for children in their homes. They have regular daily visits from paramedics. They're monitored by doctors and nurses remotely. Parents are pretty excited about this option. Many of them that reporter Michelle Crouch talked to said that, you know, it keeps their kids at home where they're most comfortable and they're not exposed to these hospital infections. But Michelle also talked to some experts who said that hospital care at home can be a little bit risky. And, you know, there's also a financial incentive, some of the experts told Michelle, for hospitals to offer these programs. Basically, they can charge the same fees and facility fees that they would charge if a patient was in the hospital, but the hospital is not facing the large overhead costs of having that child in the hospital.
Finally, over the weekend, one of your reporters wrote about a hidden piece of Charlotte's history, and that's the Carhartt Mansion ruins in Rock Hill. So we're talking about the family whose name is on workwear all over.
Oh, yeah. So this was a fun story. So back in 1909, a guy named Hamilton Carhartt, who did own that denim workwear company that we are all familiar with, he bought 1,000 acres along the Catawba River, and he built a summer retreat. It would be near his cotton mill that produced denim for his company. So he lived there for a while, and but not very long, because in the 1920s, he had to sell the mansion because of the Great Depression, and the house was dismantled in the 1950s. But the ruins of it are still there.
That's Christina Bowling of the Charlotte Ledger Business Newsletter. Support for Bizworthy comes from the Law Office of Robertson and Associates. And for Thursday, May 1st, that's Newsworthy. I'm Eric Thiel.